is once we're all together, we all make a Publix run or a Walmart run. And then at that point, we're all shopping like, all right, I want steak. Oh, okay, get chicken. Oh, get Swiss cake rolls for one of my friends. Get this and get that. And so then at that point, we're filling everything up and then we're splitting the tab.
This sounds like the surf trips I did with my friends when I was 16.
Yeah, it's pretty much. Yeah, look, we're just like teenage boys going shopping.
Hi, everyone. I'm Stephanie.
And I'm Jeremy.
Authors of Where Should We Camp Next? A 50-state guide to amazing campgrounds and other unique outdoor accommodations.
Almost 12 years ago, we bought a pop-up camper that changed our lives and introduced us to the joys of RV travel.
Join us now as we talk about where to camp, what gear to bring, and the best food to cook.
We will also keep you dialed in to the latest RV innovations from people in the know.
So pull up a chair and join us around the digital campfire.
This is the RV Atlas. Hello, everybody, and welcome to today's episode of the RV Atlas. Today, we welcome back onto the show Brother Johann Schnell, our longtime correspondent who's given us some great episodes over the past couple of years. And today, Johann is going to be giving us all of the inside information that you will ever need to camp at the Daytona International Speedway. Johann has been going to the Rolex race for, I think, 7 or 8 years with his buddies, and they have this thing wired. So on today's episode, Johann is going to break down the pricing, the areas where you can camp, tips for dry camping, his own personal story about going there with his friends, tips for viewing the races, tips for dealing with the heat. I mean, he's going to break down the whole thing from his personal experience. So if any of you out there have ever dreamed of dry camping at a place like the Daytona International Speedway, this episode's for you. And even if you have no interest in racing, I think you'll still enjoy hearing about how people use their RVs for like week-long stays at races like this. So Johann's going to break this all down for us. We're going to come back in a second. But before we dive into some really, really terrific original content from Johann, we have sponsored messages from our friends at Blackstone and our friends at Ocala Marion County. The sound of bacon or burgers and steak sizzling is the sound that you crave this summer. Blackstone is the original flat-top griddle with more than 5 million griddles sold. Blackstone is the way that America cooks in the great outdoors. You can cook everything you can on a traditional grill and a thousand things you can't. Do you want an incredible breakfast? How about lunch or dinner? The solid steel flat-top infuses the flavors. Pick the size and style that's right for your next camping trip. The 17-inch and 22-inch griddles are easy to store in your RV and still have the space to feed the hungriest army, maybe like a group of friends at the Daytona International Speedway. There's even a portable Blackstone with an air fryer built in. Talk about variety. With Blackstone, you can cook anything, anytime, anywhere. For outdoor cooking fun and flavor that you can't find anywhere else, go wherever griddles are sold or head on over to blackstoneproducts.com. And please remember, if it's not a Blackstone, it's just not a griddle. The RV Atlas podcast is also sponsored by our friends at Ocala Marion County. Located in Central Florida, just off I-75, this is a place that was tailor-made for summer road trips and family vacations. Whether you're looking for campgrounds or RV parks, there are plenty of options in Ocala Marion County. And once you've settled in, the whole place becomes your personal outdoor playground. It all starts with the area's amazing natural springs. These things are crystal clear and they're always 72 degrees, perfect for swimming, paddleboarding, kayaking, you name it. There are countless trails to explore. Whether you're hiking, biking, or even riding horses, you can golf, zip line, or stroll through the quaint historic downtown. The options are truly endless. Honestly, it's the perfect place to leave work and worries behind and just experience everything travelers like us love the most. So take it from us here at the RV Atlas. If you're looking for a place that has everything you need for your best vacation ever, it's safe to say that summer starts in Ocala Marion County. Learn more and plan your fun today at ocalamarion.com. Hello, Johann, and welcome back to the RV Atlas. How are you doing, man?
Hey, what's going on, Jeremy? How are you doing?
Well, it's always great to talk to you. And I've been asking everybody as they come back on the show, how has camping season been treating you so far in 2021? Are you getting out there?
Getting out there. It's been a busy 2021, kind of making up for lost time in 2020.
I feel the same way. And you're heading out in a couple days for another trip, right?
Yeah, my favorite. So obviously the family loves Disney, but my personal favorite is beach camping at Bryn Mawr, which is a small campground south of St. Augustine. It's just awesome. You got the beach on one side and then a really nice pool on the other side of the campground. You can't go wrong.
You seem to have so many great options for camping where you are in Florida. I mean, there's a lot of private campgrounds, a lot of state parks, a lot of beautiful places for you to go relatively close to home, right?
Yeah, it's we're spoiled, and the downfall of that is that we don't dabble to go too far because we've got it so good.
Well, I'm jealous because I only have a handful of places close by. But today we're going to talk about camping at Daytona International Speedway, and I've been wanting to have you on the show for this for at least a year, and maybe even 2 years. I mean, anytime I see you posting pictures or talking about this annual trip you do with your buddies, I'm like, oh my God, that seems really like a cool, unique way to use your RV. So on today's show, you're going to kind of break down the different options for camping there. Give people tips on getting a site, break down the different areas where you can get a site, give us some dry camping tips, and also just talk about this annual tradition you have with your friends. It's just all kinds of great stuff here in your notes. I'm so excited to dive in. Are you ready to go?
Yeah, let's go.
So what if you want to camp at Daytona at the Speedway? Like, what are some different events where that is even an option?
So the cool part about Daytona, and I think for listeners, this might apply to other track facilities throughout the nation too. But the cool part is that there's large racing events throughout the year, but the facilities also lend themselves well for other types of events that are not just racing. So examples at Daytona would be the Rolex 24, which I'm just kind of thinking chronologically, like throughout the year. Rolex is really the first big race that happens at Daytona. It's always at the end of January. And then you've got the Daytona 500 almost a month later. And then you've got another big event. Right now it's called the Coke Zero 400. And that's kind of halfway through the year. But the cool part is that there's also other stuff sprinkled throughout. And so the Rolex, for example, is a 4-day event. The Daytona 500 is a 1-day event. But what they do is they add in other smaller series of racing that's similar to it. So in the Rolex, for example, you would have like the BMW or the Mazda Cup, and you would have like other like smaller type race teams with that similar types of cars going on that Thursday, Friday, and then the main race being Saturday and Sunday. So it's a great reason to go camping. And with the Daytona 500, the same thing. They kind of have like the truck series and other stuff before it. But there's also other things too. Like you probably saw my post about Jeep Beach, which is was a huge gathering of Jeeps that come all over the nation. And they were all inside the track at Daytona as a great facility. And then later on this year, there's going to be a big concert festival called Welcome to Rockville, where same thing. It's a 3 or 4 day concert festival, and there's going to be camping inside. So a lot of this stuff really applies.
And you camp at the Rolex every year, correct? Like that's your personal tradition with your friends, right?
Yeah. So most of my information is really tailored around camping for the Rolex 24-hour race. And yes, that is our trip.
Now you love RVs and you love cars and you love trucks, and this seems like heaven on earth for you, all these different options, right?
It sure is. I think the one downfall is that it's a guy's trip, and so that's cool in itself. But the one downfall is that my wife is also in the same thing, and unfortunately she stays home with the boys on Rolex. So sometimes I'm like, oh man, I wish she was here, because we used to go to Rolex before this annual event as a couple. And so that's the only downfall. I hope she can make it down one of these years.
Cool. I do too. And your wife was on our podcast recently too. She was awesome when you guys came on and did the Disney episode. That was such a cool episode. So talk to us about getting a site. Like, I mean, this is very foreign territory for me, right? Like I don't have these kinds of options here near me. And I would love to do something like this with you at some point. So for everyone listening, if they wanted to try to camp at, you know, the Rolex or the Daytona or whatever, just give us the basics. What do we need to know to get started?
Yeah, so the for the Rolex and I would say for the race events, you do it through the Daytona International's website, and so it's like that company runs super smooth. I like how they do everything. They really control a lot of stuff, and so for the Rolex, the Daytona 500, all of that, they have a specific camping website that's through, like, you would just go to Daytona International and it pulls it up, but you would go through the camping for that specific event, and then they give you different options depending primarily on price and location. But the way I generally think about it when I try to explain it to somebody, it's really breaking down. And do you want to be inside the actual race complex, or do you want to be right outside of the track? And when I say outside of the track, you're still within the Daytona complex. So from a security aspect, you're not outside of it, just in a general parking lot. You're still within the Daytona. It's just a matter of, if you think about one of these racetracks, most of them, I believe, or Daytona specifically, you have to actually go underground in a tunnel, and that tunnel goes underneath the track. So when you look at the Daytona, you know, like the way the track is laid out, these turns are really high banked, and they carry a lot of, the cars have to carry a lot of speed. And so the only way to really get into the track is going underneath a tunnel. And so you have sites that are inside the track area, and then you have sites that are outside of that track area, so on the other side of the tunnel. And so you've got, I'm going to call it, just for simple purposes, outside of the track or infield camping. So infield camping, you're inside the track. You went underneath the tunnel, and then there's going to be choices within the infield. And I call it being on Boardwalk and Park Place, because you're inside the action. Like, you are a part of the race when you're camping there.
And I imagine that's much harder to get those spots, right?
For sure. And so I don't know how they do it for other types of races, but for Rolex, it's such a big tradition for a lot of people, not just like for our group, but for a lot of families, that they actually, once you rent a spot, you automatically get right of first refusal for next year. So a lot of these people that camp in the infield kind of own that site until they decide to let it go. So it's a big deal to get your like, once you're able to get a spot, you think long and hard for the following year, like, are you going to give it up or not? Because it's not guaranteed that you would be able to get it. And that was the case for us. And when we were able to secure four spots next to each other, making a big square, now, like, the first time we did it, we loved it and it was awesome. But now we kind of have three spots secure all the time, and we sublease one out. We just don't want to give it up, because you're not guaranteed to be able to get it.
Oh my gosh. It's almost like getting, like, season tickets to your NFL team or something like that. I mean, do people hang on to these for decades? I mean, do you know anyone that's been coming for years upon years upon years?
Personally, I don't know someone that had that. I personally know somebody that has it. I don't have one like that. But because we've been going since 2014, when you walk the track as much as we do for Rolex, you definitely see the same campers, because some of these campers are extremely unique. Not the camper itself, but the platforms that they'll put on top of the camper for you to be able to, you know, go up to the roof, but not really step on the RV's roof. You're going onto the platform that they bring. You see a lot of these campers in the same spot in this, you know, year over year. So I can imagine there's a big, especially for the infield, there's a big amount, a big percentage that are repeat, for a long time.
What else do we need to know about pricing, about actually trying to get these tickets? I mean, you've got this whole thing wired. Just keep informing us. What do we need to know if we want to get here?
Yeah, what I would recommend is, there is the period that, so like right now, for example, I just got my letter for my four RV spots, and I have until July 15th, I believe, to renew. And so if I hadn't done this before, I would be going on Daytona's website and I would be looking it up, and it would be telling me that tickets will open up in probably July 16 or something like that. And I would try to be the first one. And you can tell that this becomes an issue because their phones really get bogged down around these times with people trying to call in and trying to reserve their site for that year. And so they're really easygoing to people on the Daytona site, because I've had to, talk to them about, switching things around and doing different things with the track passes. They're really easygoing. They're very helpful. And so they will show you, you can look on their website. They have for Rolex particularly, there's about 10 different types of sites that you can get based on where it is at the track. Some places at the track are more desirable than others from a viewing perspective. Some very, very few will have an electric hookup. But then there's other things. Do you want to be near Lake Lloyd, or do you want to be near the horseshoe, or do you want to be near the Ferris wheel? Like, there's just a lot of different, there's like 10 different areas. You'll look through the map, and then when you call, you ask them really what's available.
So do you get electric? Do you guys have electric, or you're totally dry camping where you guys camp, right?
I would estimate that maybe only 10% of sites are electric. So it's not really, and I bet that those electric sites are the ones that someone has a repeat. They're repeats. So the majority of them are not electric, and ours are certainly not electric. We camp in the outside area, so we're in the poor people area.
Yeah, but you it's January, so the evenings aren't really that hot, right? I mean, are you fine without air conditioning?
Sometimes. It's funny that there's a quick story on that. I can go in more, but the short story is, yes, there's times where you want to have the AC on during the day. It might get hot, but where you really need electric nowadays is, well, unless you have a really sweet solar setup, is to really charge all your stuff. Because you think about it, like, you're going there with cameras and GoPros and your phone, and you're on the phone all the time taking pictures and video. Or, with our group of like 9 to 13 friends, two of us might be somewhere, and then the other three are in another part of the track. You're always like trying to figure out, where to meet up and hang out. So the electric of the camper really becomes like a hub base to charge everything.
Does somebody bring like one of those jackeries or like one of those portable charging devices? It seems like you guys should all chip in and get one of those. That might help a lot.
Yeah, we do. Yeah, especially because a couple of my friends are in the IT world, so they'll bring stuff like that. Or nowadays, with the camper, we have our generator, and our friends know how to turn it on. And then when my buddies rent their RV, they've been coming with a generator too, so it's a non-issue. But yeah, electric is not the norm at Daytona, that's for sure. And neither is water, by the way. So water, there are no water hookups. There are water stations. So, like, as you're driving your rig into the track, you're going to go to one of these water stations, fill up your fresh tank, and then go to your spot. So that's another thing. But as far as sites go, there's also car and tent sites. So there's places where a lot of people are actually go there and tent camp. There's a big area where it's just tent campers. It's pretty cool. There's a range of price. I would say as cheap as $40 for the tent sites that are outside of the track, and to about as expensive as $900 or more for the like the really good sites that are inside the infield.
And that's for the week, right? The 900. Yeah. Not that's for Monday to Monday, is that correct?
That's correct.
That doesn't sound so crazy to me. I mean, are people complain about the prices, or does it seem pretty okay?
No. The Rolex too, the type of crowd that the Rolex brings in is also a little bit, in the Rolex series, you have really expensive cars like Porsches and Ferraris and Lamborghinis and things like that are out there. So you can tell, like, the people there, they're not hurting.
All right. So can you give us some pros and cons of some of the basic area options, since you have this so wired? Will you share that with us?
Yeah, so let's kind of break it down by if you're inside the track. I mean, the biggest pro to being inside the track is that you're in it. I mean, you're in it, you live it, you're like you get the Instagram shots, like you get like you're getting the whole thing. And so I would say that that's a pro, and there's some cons to that, but the biggest pro is that you're inside there. Like you like the Rolex 24 hours, for example. Because it's called 24 hours because the car is actually raced for 24 hours. So if the race starts on a Saturday at 2 o'clock, the winner is whatever team runs the most amount of laps in 24 hours. So those cars are hopefully running the whole entire time, which means that the noise in the event is really going on the whole entire time. And so when you're camping in the infield, the first few days before the event starts, it's cool because it's quiet and you're inside there. But once the action starts, it's noisy. But you know, as a car guy, you know, that gets your blood going too. So that's a great thing. The other thing is that you can build platforms, and that's the cool part about walking by and kind of people watching or campground watching, is that there's some cool, crazy platforms that people build either on the back of their pickup truck to be a little bit off the ground or on the top of the RV. I mean, there's some really cool platforms that get set up because the RV is going to be stationary for a week. You know, you might have several friends bring over all the materials to put that platform and put together, and then have really good seating and viewing from the top of your rig.
Sounds so cool. Oh my God. I mean, that's got to be one of the most amazing experiences you can have with an RV, to do something like that and have that kind of commanding view of the race, right?
For sure. One of my friends, he's on the RV group, Josh Tankersley. This last year, because of COVID, you were able, like if you had like the site that he got, the guy who's owned that site or has had that site over and over, they let him forego the site for just the 2020 season, that, you know, basically without losing for the next one because of the pandemic. And so Josh was able to get like this awesome site on a very famous turn for just this year of the pandemic. And so the guy was going to have right of first refusal for 2022. But when Josh brought his fifth wheel toy hauler to that corner, man, that was a great place. He let us go up on his roof and, you know, just be super careful. But without the platform, you're still able to sit on top of his roof and just watch this corner and like all the cars zoom by. It's just unreal.
I mean, you don't even need a fancy platform per se, right? I mean, you got a ladder on the RV, you just get yep. up there, be careful and take in the view. Oh my God, this sounds like so much fun. So any other pros and cons to certain areas that you want to share?
The con of being inside is, I would say the con to wanting to be inside is it might be hard to get a site, and the noise level too. Like the reason I never even tried going inside is I have a hybrid, and so the noise level, you know, for me sleeping is a big deal, and so I wanted to be comfortable and be outside on the other side of the track, and you can still hear it on the other side of the track, but when you're inside, you're gonna have to deal with that. And the biggest con is dealing with traffic. Remember how I said there's a tunnel to get in and out?
Yes.
Imagine, and it's one way in, one way out. So imagine a bunch of people, a bunch of RVs going in and out. That's also where the trams that transport people from the parking lot or from the outside camping areas in. So there's traffic with being inside the track.
Now, is there, I forgive my ignorance about racing, are there races going on 24 hours a day? I mean, there are cars constantly going.
Yeah. So when the race begins, let's say it begins at two in the afternoon, they will race until 2 PM of the next day. So the teams, and you ballpark, you have about 40 to 60 teams, 40 to 60 cars out there racing the whole entire time. So
that's the Rolex 24 hours, I guess, right?
Yeah, that's the Rolex 24 hours. So that it's an endurance race. It's not about how fast your car is. It's about how long it lasts. So it's the car that gets the most laps in that time.
So listen, if you had the opportunity to get a site right by the track, would you jump at it and take it? Or are you actually happier further away because you can sleep at night?
I myself, I'm still a fan of parking. And like we're in Geico Park West. That's outside. I'm happy there. It's not expensive. We have our four sites, and I like going in and out at my leisure.
So that you can enjoy the races and then go back to base camp relatively close by and feel like you're getting a little break from it as well, if you want.
Exactly. And then when you want to go out to eat or you want to go get something because you forgot something at Publix or Walmart, it's not a hassle to get out.
All right. Awesome. So I want to talk about your personal tradition, your personal group that you camp with. Was there anything else that we missed? Any other tips or anything before we kind of take a quick break and then move into your tradition at the Rolex?
No, I think we covered the important stuff.
All right. Awesome. We're going to come back in a second with more from Johan. We got dry camping tips. We're going to hear more about his annual tradition of going to this race. But before we come back, we have sponsored messages from our friends at Yogi Bear's Jellystone Park Camp Resorts and from our friends at Jayco. Whether you enjoy the comfort of a cabin, are an RV enthusiast, or prefer tent camping, award-winning Jellystone Park's first-rate accommodations, attractions, and activities provide the setting for a fun family vacation that's also easy on the wallet. Jellystone Parks have everything you and your family will need to make long-lasting camping memories. From amazing water zones, including pools, splash pads, and mini golf, to wagon rides, jumping pillows, and more. You will also find themed weekends and family camping-oriented activities that include appearances from Yogi Bear and friends. You'll notice that family fun at our exciting camp resorts is the main attraction. And with over 75 locations across the United States and Canada, you will have a quality camping experience that is also close to home. Remember, it's not just a campground, it's Jellystone Park. To find out more and book your summer and fall trips today, head on over to jellystonepark.com. The brand new J-Feather Micro Series is rugged and ready for adventure, but it's also lightweight and easy to tow. The five floor plans in the Micro Series are packed with high-end features like 16-inch Goodyear off-road tires, roof mount solar prep, and pre-wire for an inverter so you can easily use your 110 outlets, even if you're camping off-grid. The included 17-inch Blackstone griddle is also a Jayco exclusive. The side Nerf bars and optional roof and bike racks make it easy to bring your bikes and kayaks along to the mountains, the ocean, or the lake. The Micro Series has floor plans that are perfect for solo travelers, couples, or families that can't wait for their next great outdoor adventure. To find out more, visit jayco.com. Jayco, generations of family fun. Welcome back to the show, Johan. I am loving this episode so much. It's just something I've never experienced myself, and I love interviewing people that take me to places that I have never been and inspire me, and I would certainly love to do this at some point. So tell me about your personal tradition camping here every year. How did it start?
Yeah, so our first year was in 2014, in January of 2014. And in the year before that, in 2013, one of my good friends, shout out to the Iron Dog, he was getting married. And he's you know, like within our group of car friends, he's the type that he doesn't drink. He likes to go out and hang out, but he's just not a drinker. He's not like the typical, you know, party guy. Like he wants to have a typical bachelor party. And so with a bunch of our friends, we were thinking, what could we do that would honor him and still be a good time? And a lot of us living in Jacksonville, we would go to the Rolex just for fun. Like I told you, I would go with Lauren and go watch it, but we never did the camping thing. And so we thought, well, why don't we camp at Rolex for his bachelor party? And he thought that was a great idea. So we did. And it's become a tradition since 2014. And at that point we were tenting. None of us had RVs.
And were you the first one to get the RV and bring that into the dynamic, or did somebody else?
I was, and man, it was that's a cool sub story. So when we were doing tent camping for a few years, it was miserable, Jeremy. Like Florida in January can be hot or cold, and for some reason, Rolex week was always super cold and super rainy, and just not good. And so we were intense, like just miserable, man. Like we would go out, obviously it's cool to go watch the race, but sleeping was just terrible, like super rainy, super windy. Like it was just terrible for a few years. Sure enough, I get my camper, and in the first year that I got my camper, we still had the tent site, so I couldn't use my camper. So after having camped in my camper for so long, when Rolex came along, I had to go back to my tent, and that was the worst Rolex ever, just because I was already used to camping in my hybrid. And now going back to the tent, I hate the tent. I will maybe do a tent trip with my boys when they get older, but I'm not looking to go beyond the tent. So that was a rough trip. But then the funny part is, after we started doing the campers, the weather became perfect. So like, the past few years, it's like super sunny, maybe a little bit of chill, but from a race perspective, it's boring when the weather's good, because remember, this is an endurance race. So when it's rainy and miserable, there's also more accidents, or the cars, you know, will slide off the track and have some issues. And for us, we have the kind of ticket where we could go into the pit area and watch them work on the cars. And that all of our friends, that was our favorite part, is going into the garage and watching these guys wrench on these cool cars. So the past few years have been super boring, just because the weather's perfect and there's no accidents, there's no nothing. And so we're just kind of watching the cars go by round. And so it's just funny how we got the camper, and then now we haven't had a miserable Rolex yet.
Johan, I love your energy on this and your joy that this gives you, and I mean this in the nicest way possible. You sound like a little kid, right, who's just like in love with racing or baseball or whatever it is. Like, yeah, we want to see some trouble out here, right? We want to see some drama for sure. Were your friends inspired to get RVs partly because of this tradition?
No, not really. No, I can't say that. Where they were inspired, it was the first year that I had my camper. One of my friends is a car guy too, but he races his car in different big tracks, and so he actually bought an ambulance and converted it to an RV, like just for him. Like, basically he can tow. It was like an F-350 ambulance. And so he could tow his car to the track and sleep inside the ambulance area. And so what it did inspire is that they started getting away from the tent, and then we moved the following year to renting campers. And so we're getting older. We like to be able to sleep nicely.
And this isn't a one night thing either, right? I mean, you guys go for what, like 5 nights?
Yeah, about five, but four, I would say four on average, and some years five.
Well, look, I love tent camping. I have no issue with tent camping. I actually want to take the boys tent camping this summer. I actually just bought a new tent. But, owning a comfortable RV allows you to do more, I think, and to last longer in the great outdoors. So I get it all. You want to give us some dry camping advice for, you know, if you were to actually do a camp out for a week at something like the Rolex, what are some dry camping tips to make it work?
Yeah, so I'm going to assume that you don't have an awesome solar setup, because some campers do, but some don't. If you don't, it's perfectly fine. My camper doesn't have a crazy six, you know, like mine's a regular hybrid with no 6-volt batteries or anything like that. I just have a regular deep cycle battery and a generator. And that is just fine for going camping at a racetrack, because the majority of guys out there that are set up with the generator, they're not even going to have an inverter generator. They're going to all have the really loud generators. So it's going to be just fine. And those generators get drowned out later on by the race. So, I would get a generator, or if you have a solar setup, you know, just make sure that you, how many days you can last, because it's your home base. So that would be one thing. I wouldn't worry about bringing water, because there's these water stations. So the first year I didn't know about the water station. I drove all the way from Jacksonville to Daytona with a freshwater tank, and that was just a waste. So I would drive down with your freshwater how you normally do it. And then when you get to Daytona, stop by the water station real quick. It's super easy to do. You fill up your fresh tank and then you go to your spot. The other thing is, they do have mobile RV repair people that are cruising around, and they also have mobile RV dump services that are cruising around. It is a little hard when the race starts and Daytona is packed. It's going to be hard to flag down the mobile RV guy, but it is doable. And if you go with a group of friends, they're going to look out for you too. So, you know, someone like we just said, hey, we know we need to flag them. And so they'll flag them for me. And it costs around $50. Now, some years,
not to get too dirty here talking about the black tank, like how many times do you have to dump your tanks while you're there? Like, is it like halfway through you dump the tanks with this mobile guy?
Yeah. One year my camper was the only one. The year that I told you that a friend of mine had the ambulance and then another friend was using his box truck, mine really was the only one. And so my camper got abused. And so it was, you know, it was a bunch of us using my camper. And so I did, in an abundance of caution, I dumped it on Saturday to make sure that during the race, we were not going to be worried about it. But since then, I don't need to anymore. So like my rig will last with, you know, I would say five people in it, it'll last the whole time. So if I get there on Wednesday, I don't have to dump until I head home.
Are the facilities decent otherwise? Like if you want to go easy on your own tanks, are there clean bathrooms? Is it porta potties? How does that work?
Yeah, good question. Inside the track. So if you're camping in the infield, the facilities are going to be, you know, like concrete buildings, like actual bathrooms. They might have porta potties in the outer camping areas within the track, but the facilities will be the actual Daytona facilities inside the infield area. But we camp outside. And so where we camp outside, there are going to be the mobile trailers that are for showering. And those are cool because they're heated too. So like in a cold January, you can go take a shower and that trailer's super warm. But then there's a bunch of porta potties too. And so some of my friends now that, you know, if my bathroom is being used or they don't want to go into my camper, they'll go into the porta potties. They keep those pretty clean too.
Right. Cause if you only use the toilet in your RV at night, I imagine you could make it through the whole stretch probably. Mm-hmm. So any other dry camping tips if we want to stay there for the week?
Yeah, it's windy and Daytona, the track itself is windy. So I would be very careful about, you know, leaving the awning out, when you leave your campground because it is windy. And I would just bring gas cans for your generator. So you're not having to go out and fill them up. So it's very common to see a generator with a lot of gas cans next to it just to not worry about it.
So this sounds like it's not a difficult dry camping experience for somebody who's new to dry camping. Like if somebody was listening and they typically do full hookup campgrounds and they wanted to try this, it's not really trial by fire. You're certainly not cut off from amenities and everything you might need, right?
It's not. And I will lump myself in that. Like when I have watched people boondock on YouTube and things like that, I'm jealous because I would like to be able to, I would like to think of myself as someone cool enough to go out and boondock like that. But the reality is most of the stuff we do is I'm really a full hookup kind of person. I mean, that's just, I'm just bougie like that. But, what's impressive is every time my camper is at Rolex and everything works and I have access to all my things, like just as if I was at Fort Wilderness, it's awesome. Like the RVs are just so awesome in that you're just comfortable.
You know, look, you're in Florida. I'm in New Jersey. There's a lot more boondocking out west, right? I mean, I'd go boondocking every weekend, but it's not really an option so much around me. So anything else on the dry camping or do you want to talk about like stocking up on food and supplies for the week?
No, I think on dry camp, I think we've covered it.
All right. So you're going for, you know, 5 to 7 nights with your buddies. Like, how do you guys handle the food and supplies?
All right. So this is where I don't have the benefit of my wife's awesome. Like, she's the one that handles the food part on our camper. But for this trip, we're super disorganized guys that you could tell, like, none of us really do the food prep or planning for our families. And so we typically do is I will just bring the basics in my camper. So I make sure like coffee, milk, eggs, butter, like just the basic stuff is in my camper when we head down. And then, you know, just planning with these guys is tough, man. And so if we wanted to buy stuff ahead of time, no one can really commit to what it is. So the best thing that works for us is once we're all together, we all make a Publix run or a Walmart run. And then at that point, we're all shopping like, all right, I want steak. Oh, okay, get chicken. Oh, get Swiss cake rolls for one of my friends. Get this and get that. And so then at that point, we're filling everything up and then we're splitting the tab.
This sounds like the surf trips I did with my friends when I was 16.
Yeah, it's pretty much. Yeah, look, we're just like teenage boys going shopping.
I'm the same way now, too. I'm not criticizing. So does it work? I mean, does it all come together?
Oh yeah, it not only does it work, it's cool because at that point, you know, we're all in it together, and the meals that come out of it are really good.
And you've got all kinds of places nearby, right? If you've got Home Depot nearby, what else is nearby?
Home Depot, I have to give them a shout out because they know that they are right out. Like, it's literally, Jeremy, across the street from the entrance to the camping area of Daytona. And so that Home Depot knows that they get campers from Daytona. And they have a special end cap in that Home Depot with just like the basic stuff that you might find at Walmart, not at a Home Depot, but that Home Depot has it. And how you know why I bring that up is because for Jeep Beach, I was able to get a site with electric, but the electric posts in Daytona are all 50 amp. And so I had to go buy a dog bone. I couldn't find mine. I don't think I brought it that time. And so I got caught off guard. I had to go to that Home Depot and I was impressed, man. Like
super impressed. They had something like that. I mean, that they are literally catering to that specific audience.
Yep. It was awesome.
That's not something you can always even get at Walmart necessarily.
Yeah. It was good.
Well, anything else nearby we should know about as a backups for supplies?
So Target is very close to it's across the street from Daytona too. There's a Dick's Sporting Goods. How I know all these places are there is because someone inevitably will not bring a camping chair, so we got to go to Dick's, and someone forgot something that might not be at Publix, so we go to Target. So it's just funny how it just with guys, we all like piling up and going in and going grabbing somewhere and then coming back and enjoying it.
And it's not, look, it's not easy to get all the food. When we went to Moose Hillock in Lake George a few weeks back, Stephanie had a super busy week at work. So I did all the food prep and all the grocery shopping. And it was like 3 days of work because it's just, I'll go to the grocery store, come home and go, oh crap, I forgot this. It's like a 4-trip situation to get groceries for the weekend, where she's just more efficient and thoughtful and organized. So I'm with you on this one, brother Johan.
Nice.
Any places to eat nearby if you just want to go grab some good food for dinner instead of cooking in the RV?
I don't know that I want to give away my my two places, but they're so good. It's just it's hard not to give them a shout out because it's so good. The one that I would place above the other is called Bethune Grill, and it's just a small hole in the wall place that's been there for a long time. Their wings with honey sauce, oh my gosh, man, they're just so good. They're so good.
You're making me hungry.
You gotta try it. It's just, it's unreal.
I just want to come with you guys. I really want to figure out how I can be cool enough to get an invitation.
Hey, I don't want to call you out on your podcast, but you've been invited several times.
Oh man, we got to put this together.
And then the other one is the Daytona Tap Room. This one is a dive that was actually featured on Man vs. Food. And so this is the quintessential dive. It's a cool place. They serve a lot of different types of burgers, and they're crazy burgers. So like it just ridiculous. Like I think they have the donut burger. So it's like two donuts and then the burger in between. It's insane. It's a cool place.
Stephanie and I are super old friends with Casey Webb, the current host of Man versus Food. So I wonder, there was another host before him, but he's been the host the past few seasons. I'll have to go back and find that episode. Super nice guy we grew up with around here.
Yeah.
So let's break it down. Like, let's just end by talking about your specific setup where you guys actually camp. You know, tell us what it looks like. You know, if we were hanging out there with you, what's the deal?
Yeah. So we have four sites. So when you get to Daytona, before going into the tunnel, we're in the outside camping area. So we're not within the track. We're right on the outside of the track. And our four sites make one giant square. So they're two next to each other and then two on the back that are also next to each other. And so what we typically do is We typically have three friends with RVs. So one brings, Josh brings his, I bring mine, and then another group of two guys rent one. And so we have three RVs, and then we might sublease out that fourth spot to another car guy, the car friend of a friend. And they'll bring their RV too. If not, that could be like our parking lot for our cars.
That's so smart.
Yeah. And so we make we kind of like shelter the middle area where we all hang out. Because I told you it's windy. So it's cool having everything kind of enclosed. And so like between the two campers on one side, I'll put the Gladiator or the Tundra kind of across to shield the wind. And then on the other side, we'll try to block off the other one. And then we all kind of have this common area in the middle. And how we do it is typically I'll drop my camper off on Tuesday or Wednesday and have it set up. And it's easier when the place is empty. And if I can work from there, I'll do it. But if not, then, you know, I'll come back either that Thursday morning and that's when we all start showing up. And that's also probably the day that my friend will have his rented RV dropped off too. So that's how we do it. And mine kind of becomes the home base for plugging stuff in and people using my fridge and stuff like that. Just because it's the one that everybody knows.
Now, you've mentioned your friend, Josh, who's in the RV Atlas group. He is a chef, right?
Yep.
So I imagine that's kind of a cool guy to have along with you on a trip like this.
Yeah, he's actually ditched us this past year. I told you he got lucky and got that one site inside on the infield. But I gotta call him out because he just told us that he's not going to be in this group of four. He's using his brother's site that's a little bit like a block away. But yeah, it's cool. It's cool camping with him. We get to bum off food when he cooks it, and then he bums off food when we cook it. So, yeah, it's good company. He brings his dad and his brother and his nephews, and then they all join up. And it's just cool hanging out. Like we'll add a lot of friends or family to the group, but the core really stays the same.
So tell me about actually like watching the races. I mean, I just don't know anything about this. I mean, is it a real thrill? I mean, these are 24-hour races. Like how do you watch it for several hours and go take a break? I mean, what is the race experience like?
So in non-COVID time, the track, the race begins around 2:00. But on Saturday morning, they usually have a 5K event. Very, very early where you get to run the actual the course. And so that's been my tradition is to go run that in the morning, like before, while everybody's still sleeping. And so there's a lot of runners that are there that will take the advantage to run the track. And then they're on Saturday, right after that run, they'll open the track up for, you know, people that have tickets to go in, and you can see the race teams actually get ready for the race. And then like an hour right before the race, the cars are lined up at the start line and the race car drivers are among the crowd. And so they're having like NBC Sports is interviewing the race car drivers right there in front of you. You could be right next to them listening into the interview, and you get to meet them. You get to sign. It's just crazy. Like you get full access to these guys. And girls too.
It sounds so immersive. Like it really, sounds like an amazing, amazing experience.
It is, man. And then you get to see the cars. You're right. Like you can't really sit there and watch the race for the whole 24 hours. So you do, you start watching. We usually watch the beginning of the race for a couple hours and then we go. They have like Ford will have an area where you can see their cars, Cadillac, Mazda, things like that. We go do those things. And then after that, we'll go to like the tap room. We'll drive out to the tap room, go get something to eat, and then come back. And then we get to watch the race at night. Nighttime racing is so awesome because you get to see when the car is slowing down into a corner, you get to see the brakes light up. You get to see, it's just so much. You get to see the exhaust backfire. It's so cool.
Johan, I just want to thank you so much. I mean, you just took me into this whole world that I've never participated in before. And I had this sort of vague sense that I would like enjoy doing this. And it just sounds amazing. And I would really love it to get to go with you guys at some point. So I'm moving this way, way up on my personal RV bucket list. Thank you so much.
Yeah, man, let's do it.
Let's do it again. Any closing thoughts? Any last things you want to say? Anything you missed before we wrap it up?
No, it's if you're a listener out there and you've been wanting to go watch a race, even remotely interested in going to watch a race, this is a good excuse to use your camper and watch a race. It's you will not regret it. It's a lot of fun.
And so many uses of the RV besides your local state park or your local KOA. You know, it's like our RVs can take us to so many, so many cool places. And thank you for taking us to Daytona today. I really appreciate it, Johan.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Talk to you soon, bud.
A big thank you for listening to this episode of the RV Atlas. And a big thanks to our sponsors.
To Jayco, the Thetford Corporation, Camp Spot, Yogi Bear's Jellystone Park Camp Resorts, and our friends at Ocala Marion County in Florida.
To find out more about the topics discussed in this show, visit thervatlas.com.
And join the friendliest group of RVers over at the RV Atlas Group on Facebook.
And if you enjoyed this show, please consider leaving us a review over at iTunes.
And we'll see you at the campground.
See you at the campground.